we've come to Bermondsey Street Bees. What a treat, eh?
Hey, fantastic. Lead the way.
I know, isn't it nice to be out, Jane?
It's so fantastic.
Long hot days in the shade of some big old tree. Making daisy chains round.
It's gorgeous.
That we're alive.
Hello?
Hello.
Lyndon Lewis. Oh, hi, Sarah.
Hello, lovelies. Hello, Sarah.
See,
kettle's on.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, this looks amazing in here. Look at all those honeys.
I know, it's lovely. It smells so beautiful.
So Sarah, I'm looking around at your lovely honey room, and I'm seeing all these sort of palettes and white plastic buckets things with wax in them. And
it's great, though. I love it. It makes
your
me
own
laugh so
tasting
much.
Spoons.
Oh, thank you.
Right. Sarah, it be possible if I could have a metal spoon, which I'll just wash each
yes,
time?
Yes, of course you can.
Yeah. It's just because they make me go funny, those.
Do they?
Those, yeah. Ooh, yeah, it makes yeah, it go okay. through me.
No, you
she's ever so awkward.
No, I'm sorry to be awkward, but it just, even looking at those spoons.
It's what I use when I'm tasting some metal spoons.
Is it?
Well, Sarah, would you be able to tell us a little bit about yourself and who are you? I mean, I know, but Alice don't.
I used to, in the very early days of my whole adventure with honey, I used to describe myself as the beekeeper's wife. And in that role, I was like, you know, sort of support system. But luckily, because I'm allergic to bee stings, mm-hmm. I didn't just get shoved in a suit to trail around after Dale and just be the assistant beekeeper, and I think that was the luckiest break ever. I was brought up by honey fiends, but a lot of my family are farmers mm-hmm. and wine producers and stuff, so very much connected with the soil and with stock and stuff, and my mum is a complete honey fiend. And in the 60s in Britain, you didn't have a lot of good honey. You had this horrible, claggy clover Canadian honey, Gale's honey, and it was just... it was vile, you know, we just didn't want to eat it. So wherever we travel, because my dad was in the travel trade, so we did go abroad quite a lot. My mum would drag us off to find a beekeeper.
Oh,
and it would be like some crusty old bloke in a cave somewhere with all of these...
A cave?
In a cave, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, beekeeper's like a cave. Well, it's a good temperature, you see. Oh. So she'd drag me off, or us off, and we'd go up this sort of mountain in, you know, like a Fiat the size of a sewing machine, and find this beekeeper and taste all these honeys. And they were amazing. You know, they were... some of them were polyflorals, a lot of them were monoflorals. And, you know, those memories imprint themselves. We actually have neural pathways in our brain from our very earliest encounter as proto-humans with honey, because it was the only sweet thing on Earth when humans evolved. Everything we take granted as sweet now, like fruit and vegetables, is because we bred it to be sweet, because we respond so strongly to sweetness. And the memories that you have of honey are like the memories that are evoked by walking past someone wearing a scent. So particularly from childhood, people will, you know, go really misty-eyed when they taste something and go, oh, that's like the honey that my aunt would give me at her kitchen table. And so there is a huge sort of evocation. And so then there was like, how do we get 3 kilos of honey home from Spain or Greece or wherever? And my mum would be like, oh, it's okay, we just put it in the dirty laundry. And I mean, this wasn't to hide it, it's just to like isolate it from anything else you might have. So we were just like all the time we'd arrive home, you take out all the knickers. So they're just like covered with honey. So, and I'm not even sure we had a washing, I don't think we had a washing machine. She must have hand washed
all the honey, all the honey knickers.
All the honey knickers, the honey towels, the honey vests, the honey, God knows what. But
she smelled good.
She smelled yes, lovely. Yeah, her skin was lovely. Yeah. So when Dale started this hobby keeping journey and I was like working with him, I was really, really fascinated by honeys and the different colours mm-hmm. and the different textures and the different everything, and I didn't know what made any of that tick. Mm-hmm. And also I was tasting English honeys, which were really good. In those English honeys, I was starting to experience something that was, you know, really, really interesting. I didn't really know a lot about, so I read everything I could, I talked to every beekeeper I could, I tested every honey that I could get my hands on, and I found a book which was really useful called The Honey Connoisseur, which guided me through like some honey tastings and techniques and things. And then amazingly, the course in Italy was started to be done in English. Mm. And a friend of mine who's a food writer rang me up and just said, you can go on that course. And I was literally on an email a second later to the guy who's organising, saying, me, please, 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 me.
When you sort of, because I mean, I fancy it, because I love honey, and I'm, you know, the same as you, but you know, what would you think you could sort of use it for? You know, I like think, you think about a wine connoisseur,
yeah,
don't you?
It is.
But,
yeah.
but I suppose it's a much more niche market.
I think all of us who've done that training have gone away and made our own career out of it. I don't think any two of us do the same thing. A lot of people are big honey producers and they're using it really basically to sell their stuff. I'm really lucky because we sell honey to so many amazing chefs and bartenders, and they're always hungry for training and for continuous professional development work. So they will be doing chocolate tastings, coffee tastings, all sorts of things, but most of them will never have had honey tasting. So, you know, I'm in the normal world, the, you know, pre-lockdown, hopefully post-lockdown, mostly I'm sitting talking to a group of chefs or to bartenders, and I'm taking through sort of, you know, some honey tasting, some comparative tasting, just opening up the palates a little bit to the idea of honey and the differences, because basically I want them to stop using blended honey in their kitchens and bars. My question when somebody says to me honey, I'm like, what honey? Where from? You know, there's no such thing as honey as a sort of commodity unless it's been blended and highly processed. So, you know, my interest is in teaching them that difference. And they're you know, that's a really fascinating interchange always. I also work with honey producers who are abroad to try and give them a little bit more visibility if they're producing something absolutely wonderful. So it's quite amazing where it's led me. That's what I mean about stories, because if I can take people back through the joy of honey through their olfactory system, absolutely engage those neural pathways that we all have in response to honey, and get them to think about where it comes from and the soil and all of those really, really crucial environmental issues, then I sort of think that's my job done. If people come to a tasting, they take away three ideas from it.
Yeah.
And also I always say to people, if you don't leave here a honey snob, I haven't done my job.
And it rhymes.
Yeah, it does.
I'm looking at these lovely honeys that you've got in front of us, and I'm looking at all the different colours. I mean, they look kind of like sort of Marmite.
I did choose these. I wanted to take you sort of like me onto the dark side.
Yes.
Because I think with my lovely colleague Paula, you tasted some dark honey and it was quite a shock. As my tastes have evolved in honey, I've gone right away from the lighter, more sugary ones and much more towards these darker ones. I haven't got any ones which are truly horrifying in here or as surprising as the Arbutus.
Yes, I struggled with that one.
Yeah, or the sweet chestnut. So I'm hoping to show you that there is a midway. But one of the really important things about these dark honeys is that they are very mineral rich. And across the world, the panoply of medicinal honeys, of which there are thousands, tend to be largely dark honeys. Not exclusively, but you know, 99%. And that's because they come from plants who've had to get their roots right down. So they're bringing up this minerality from the soil that is the basis of the colour.
That's so interesting.
What's really interesting about these honeys is that it's not just the honey that's medicinal. The actual tree itself that medicinal honeys come from will almost always have a huge medicinal history as well. So its leaves, its bark, and things will be really embedded in the ancient folk medicine of the area from which it comes. And I love that fact that it's not, you know, it's not all about the honey, it's not all about our relationship with the honey and that, you know, it's going to help our health. Again, it's much more about the totality, the sort of mosaic of sustainability and of the origin of things and the authenticity that I could wang on about for hours, really. Somebody gave me this great badge that said, how do you know it's real honey if you don't know the beekeeper? And it's a very, very good question, because honey is now the third most adulterated foodstuff on earth after wine and olive oil. It's a massive, massive industry. What they do is they create something that our brain, in this lazy way, will accept as honey, because it just seems to tick the right boxes. But actually, when you compare it to a real honey, it's just got nothing. And there's another saying, supermarket honey has a taste, real honey has flavours. And that's a really nice little differentiator. It's super sweet and stuff. And as you know, again, from your tastings, not all honey is super sweet. Some of it's sour, some of it's tart, some of it's like a juicy fruit. In fact, one of the first ones I'm going to give you to taste. So this is, it's intensely sticky, actually. do you find you are the woman with the damp cloth? I mean, I just spend my life... trying to deal with the stickiness. When I had toddlers, I was like, oh my god, I can live with stickiness for a while. But as they grew up, I managed to sort of deal with that. And now, ever since beekeeping started, so look at this incredible dark, unctuous inside. Oh,
beetle.
We're
very
excited,
aren't
we?
We're
very
tasters.
Yeah, we are. I'm going to teach you my toasting technique, because you remember saying about how your brain wants to just grab onto that sweetness. Mm-hmm. It's very easily satisfied. So that's because our tongue is experiencing it. If you're eating honey with something, you get a chance to get it onto the back of your palate before you start experiencing honey. If you're just putting it straight in your mouth, that area on your tongue which responds to sweetness will immediately trigger your brain's, it's complete, you know, oh yeah, that's sweet. So when I'm doing tastings for food and drink professionals, I say the one word you're not allowed to use here is sweet. In first response, even if it is the sweetest honey you've ever tasted, I want you to look beyond it. And it's much, much easier with these dark honeys because so much more going on behind them. They're just much, much richer and more intense. I'll just tell you very briefly about this honey. This is buckwheat. Buckwheat is really, really a fantastically useful crop from China right through Eastern Europe and into France. It's used as a cover crop in organic farming rather than cover the land with chemicals. It's also a staple food. So like you have kasha, you know, the Eastern European kasha, the grain, that's buckwheat. It's also, the flowers are used to produce drugs for all sorts of things. It's a very potent medicinal, and often the plant is as medicinal as the honey. And the honey is often used for people who are diabetics and things to control their blood sugar, which I know is something, again, you've heard about with Paula. It is described as a zoo in a jar because it has a real animal smell, a real, like, oh my god. And again, it's not honey smell, it's a different smell. So,
well, I mean, it looks like treacle.
It does look like treacle.
It looks like blackstrap molasses.
Yes, yes, it does.
So I always find Ribena in this. So just see if you can. What you're going to do is you're going to take a generous amount of the honey, you're going to hold your nose, and you're going to park it behind your front teeth and take the spoon away, because you don't want any sort of tainted spoon. Then you're going to just let your tongue spread it onto the back. Just count to five with your nose held gently close, and then breathe. By which time it's reached your palate, and then you're breathing through it, and then the flavours can start to differentiate. It's lovely.
Oh,
isn't
my
it?
God. That is.
So there's not a trace of bitterness in there. It's just really a yummy, fruity experience.
Oh, it's so fruity.
I love it. Do you know what I mean about Ribena? Right, scoop away.
No. She always has to have a big spoonful. Take your hand off your nose then now.
Yeah.
It is very molasses treat. It's very medicinal.
It is.
But it's like, it reminds me of something like my nan used to give me.
Malt.
Was it to make me feel better about
malt.
Something? And I can't remember what
malt.
It was.
Malt, maybe.
She used to have a spoonful of that.
Yeah.
Because we had, we still have a herbal shop in, I come from a place called Rawtenstall in Lancashire, called Fitzpatrick's, and it's ancient. It's an ancient, and they used to sell sarsaparilla.
So you, like me, are inculcated from the very beginning, with, like, starting from the bottom up, and the herbs, and the this and the that.
Sarsaparilla and dandelion and burdock, proper old style. But that absolutely reminds me of what my nan used to give me.
But
good.
I'm still experiencing the flavours of this that's going on. And that's another difference, is you've got, in real honey, you've got durability. You've got things that are evolving. And it goes on and on and on, particularly if you've got a good, good polyfloral and you've got all those layers to unpack. It can be 3-4 minutes before you've finished actually working through all the flavours. The other thing I love about that is that silky mouthfeel. Because that varies hugely. And it's really, I think, another exciting thing. So I'm sure you've seen honeys that are fir and pine and oak and stuff, and said maybe to yourself, flowers on a fir tree? Does a fir tree flower? No. How can you have fir honey? And the answer is, there's another little insect that gets in between in the story of this honey, which is called honeydew. In fact, they're aphids. There's several different sorts of them, so you get different sorts of aphid honey. So essentially, the aphids are sucking the sap from the tree, and they're just like a little vacuum pipe. So what goes in goes straight through them, and it causes a little sugary blob on the end. Now, bees are
a pearl.
No. A poo? Is it a poo?
No, it's not a poo. No, it's just like a sort of a throughput. They've derived what they need from it, and they just throughput it. Now, honeybees are incredibly adaptable. One of the reasons why they're such successful pollinators and so widespread is because they can adapt to feed on pretty much anything, unlike a lot of wild bees, which are specialist feeders. So they will go and find these sugars on the leaves and on the bark from where they've dropped off the aphids, and they will scoop them up and they will make a honeydew, honey, which is held to be, certainly across Eastern Europe and in Italy and places, the most medicinal honey. If you open it up, you get a sort of a musky nose, but has this very, very beautiful, shiny, gelatinous quality, which is one of the indicators that it's honeydew, and it has this typically very dark colour. So have a go on that. Mm. So, this is of apricot jam.
Thank you. That last lick's the best.
Apricot jam.
Apricot jam with a bit of blackstrap treacle underneath, a little bit of a must.
Yeah, I mean, the predominant thing is quite jammy. But it's delicious. And in a lot of them where they are from fir trees and stuff, you'll also get that sort of slight sense of the tree itself. That not so particularly. But when you see pine forest honey, when you see those sorts of things, they're always worth trying.
I see what you mean about the jam. Mm. There's definitely like a jam.
Now it's gone plummy on me, that jam. So again, fruity, very approachable. Yeah. Very, very easy to eat. I mean, that on a piece of good bread with some salty butter is delightful. So you get all these medicinal honeys like Manuka, which I think we've fully discussed, and you know, it is what it is. It's not the be-all and end-all of medicinal honeys. And they are challenging. They taste like...
But dare I use the word sweet?
Yes. No, at this stage you're allowed to.
Well, because you're saying it's like jam, it's very, very sweet, and it's actually sending my teeth a little bit on edge because it's...
pervasively sweet.
Yeah, definitely
compared to that first one, which where sweetness was certainly not the first thing you'd say about it. So then I'm going to take you into...
There is a bit of an air of, as you imagine, a conifer. I don't know whether that's what
you said. No, I agree with you.
Almost in a conifer sort of forest. I could just smell a little bit of something,
Sometimes when you have these honeys, when you take the top off, you definitely are transported into a conifer sort of environment. You also get oak honey, and that has a sort of a more of a musty thing, and that is divine.
And really you know the oak honey, because I have seen it, but I haven't tasted it. Is that, again... a honeydew honey.
Oaks feed honeybees in two other ways. One is that there's a nectar available around the acorns that they can gather, but also where you have oak galls, you know, where you have those funny blisters, which I believe is a wasp, is it, or something that causes that.
Other than sting, they do something useful.
I'm so calm around bees now, even though I'm quite allergic to their stings, but I'm not calm around wasps. I turn into Mrs. Windmill. It's like, I'm making coffee. Now, have you guys ever tasted a ling heather honey from Scotland, like a hot Scottish moor honey and stuff?
Oh, we did a Scottish honey, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I thought you had. Mm. So I'm the heather family is a huge family, and what people mostly don't know is there's such thing as a heather tree. And that grows in the Mediterranean, and it grows up to 3 metres high, so it's not that ground cover you have in your garden.
Ooh.
And it is... one of my absolute favourite
honeys. This is a very dark one again.
I want you to smell it because it's got a big nose on it, and you can sort of smell a medicinal nose and just
like
give it.
I like it when it's got a big nose, don't you?
Yes. So, just so bloody delicious.
Yeah, well, I particularly like that Scottish heather honey that we tasted on our very first tasting. Oh, gosh, it was good.
Yeah, it is very, very special. Oh. And you want it to come from as far north and as high as you can. Those ling.
Thank you.
So this, I love this on porridge or something that's quite bland. And again, it's so gentle. So I've purposely chosen honeys which are very dark, but in no way difficult to approach. Because I really, really want people to just start experimenting with understanding that, you know, it's not all about that honey-coloured honey.
Yes.
Oh, that's so...
Isn't it lovely?
So
it's gentle.
Lovely.
And it's rich. It's got sort of a nice waxiness to it.
And it's not the word you said we weren't allowed to say.
No.
It's just...
It's aromatic.
It's aromatic.
Mm.
I love it. It's really nice.
Mm. It kind of has a sort of... I won't say citric, but it's not. Yeah. It's not. It kind of you a bit of a bit of a tangy sort of.
You often do find that. The thing I also find is it's got like a little cinder toffee thing going on in it as well. Mm. Smokiness, which is very typical of the heather family, is that slight smoke in it. But it, again, it's just, it's so easy to eat. Mm. It's just
that's like lovely. Could actually just sort of lie in a bath of that, could you?
No, I'd be a waste.
Do you know, like Cleopatra, you could have a milk and honey bath, and attendants could come and top it up.
I just think I'd feel so nice if I used a bath of that.
I don't know, I just want to eat it all. I'd eat a bath of honey.
Yeah.
Would you? Yeah, well, you
right,
could.
Right, I'm gonna turn your joy into horror.
No!
No, we can't. So naming no names, I just want you to just smell and taste that. So you've had this experience of the smells of these honeys. You've had the experience of the way that the flavours evolve.
Gosh. Actually, I'm going to start crying in a minute. It's actually
Oh, yeah, you haven't cried on the episode for a while.
Oh, you know. This will do it. Yeah, this makes this me cry. This is going to do it. It makes me despair. It really does.
That actually is disgusting.
It is disgusting.
And you know, we've all had it, haven't we?
Yeah,
and it this morning.
You didn't.
I'm ashamed to say, not that one, an even cheaper one.
Oh my God,
Jane! I can't believe you said that.
No, I feel ashamed of myself.
Yeah, you have to put it on your hair and be done with it.
I am after today.
It's scary, isn't it? It's empty sugar.
Mm. Yeah, this sugar. It just tastes like
yeah. It does.
I mean,
my
own. Start crying.
Use golden syrup. So don't mess with something you know that's pretending to be something. Just use golden syrup.
Yuck. Yes, it is golden syrup. It is. That's what it is. Yeah. It's golden syrup.
It's been
syrup.
Blended from God knows where. It's been cooked. It's been microfiltered. It's been.
And when you said process, is that what you mean? Then it's been cooked, microfiltered. That's what you mean by process.
Blended as well. Where does this honey even come from?
And that is the standard supermarket honey that you buy.
And actually,
doesn't
taste.
It
doesn't
taste like honey, does it?
That is the upper end. That is the most expensive of the supermarket honeys. That one.
So some of these supermarket honeys, then they say they've got an organic version. I mean, what do you think of that?
Oh, I just think it's very suspect. I really do, because they're not declaring the origins of this honey, are they? So how can you check that they really are organic? It's very difficult in this country because, again, that patchwork quilt I was talking about. So even if you're farming and you've got your bees in an organically farmed place, you've got to ensure that at least 5 miles around is organic, and they're smack in the middle of that, because they will overfly all that gorgeous organic forage. If somebody puts a field of rape in, bees will respond to that, and it could be filled with chemicals, and they'll be off flying over the lovely organic stuff and into that rape before you can breathe. So yeah, you just have to be really careful and untrusting of these things.
You're not going to buy any more of that.
Well, no, the only reason I buy it is because my son, who sort of like, he has it on his cereal and I have it on my cereal, but he kind of goes through about
a gallon a week.
Yeah, it's like, I'm kind of the horror of seeing him use a really good honey in a way like that.
Yeah,
it's just.
I want you to go home and I want you to put golden syrup in one of those and see if he notices the difference.
But maybe he could buy his own and you have your own, and then he doesn't have to.
Good idea.
That reminds me of teenage socks.
But that's a good idea. That's a very good idea.
Travelogue time. Do you want to go to the Caribbean or do you want to go to Australia?
Can we go to the Caribbean first? Because I do rather like.
So this is made
Caribbean.
By a family of beekeepers who we know in Barbados. This is a honey from the machineel tree, which is those poison apples that line the whole of that sort of amazing Caribbean coast, but it's not toxic to people. Comes, as you see, in a soy sauce thing, because that's all they've got.
It looks like a sort of hot sauce, slightly set,
but there you go. You can still taste the top of it. And it tastes like a hot Caribbean world. It's just got that heat on it.
Oh, interesting.
A nice smell as well. It's very different from these European honeys that we've been tasting.
And so you've not looked out with this wooden spoon business. I get much more on my silver spoon.
I'm a bit jealous, but anyway.
So it's almost got an apple-y taste to it. Again, it's got those dark treacly flavours, but it's very light on the tongue. It's quite a hard one. If you don't know the local flora and you don't know what they smell like and stuff, it's really hard to understand the honey. Mm. So when I'm working with wild honeys, the one thing I'm always saying to people is, what are your bees on? And then I can look that up and I can understand the life cycle of the bees and the flora a whole lot more. Because, of course, these bees in the Caribbean they don't overwinter.
No.
They're taking a crop up about every 3 weeks. So they can be much more specific about what it is. They take little crops. They will go into a huddle in dry season and in monsoon. So they do have, just like our bees, that time when they need to really, you know, pull back on, you know, get their honey stores there and fall back on those. But we're so used to that winter-summer cycle, you forget when you go to hot climates that their bees live an entirely different life. And this is, you know, if you're sitting on a Caribbean beach and you've got, they love porridge in the Caribbean. You've got that on your porridge. It's just delicious.
But at the back of my throat, I feel heat.
That's right. It's like a little chili kick.
It's kind of like warming you through a bit, like a brandy.
I mean, you often do find that a good honey has got that sense of like a fortified wine. I often talk about port and Madeira and stuff, because you just get that sort of confluence of flavours.
It's like a brandy, I've got
a Werther's Original butterscotch thing going on now. And this is the evolution. This is the pleasure of honey.
It's amazing, isn't it, this last one
we're going to Australia for. This is Jarrah honey, which has a huge reputation as an excellent medical honey. It's pretty well tested and well understood. It comes from the Jarrah tree, and as usual there's other medicinal properties that are associated with this tree, and lovely dark medicinal honey.
This look of this honey is more like Branston pickle.
Yeah,
isn't it? In the colour, not quite as dark.
And you do
as the
want
others.
To chew it. It's got that slightly chewy texture to it, sort of gummy, chewy texture.
Oh gosh, yeah.
It makes you know, some honeys you just can just let, others you just want to chomp on. So it's definitely chomp time.
You know, we're going to be hyper this
afternoon. It looks a bit like PVA. Well, it's got the texture of sort of PVA glue in an art class.
We're going to be hyper later, Esther. We're going to have our backs of our legs smacked when we get silly. I do
love this. I mean, this is a genuinely sweet honey, but it's got all these other things going on behind.
Oh my God.
Isn't that lovely? So, I mean, if you can take your medicine like this, who wouldn't?
God, no wonder you look so healthy.
This, I have to say, came back from Singapore in my knickers.
Woohoo!
I can't even think now. I've forgotten what I said about it, except it's just really nice.
But there's something very about the smell and the taste.
Yeah, chewy.
Isn't...
Chewy was what I said about it, because it just makes you want to sort of like get it into your mouth and just. It's glorious. I love it.
I could eat the whole jar.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I think a lot of these honeys today have just reminded me of olden time. You know, like my nan.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Kind of a medicinal thing that's actually quite tasty, but is going to help you.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when the NHS says don't go to the pharmacist with a sore throat, take honey. What they're not saying is raw honey, proper honey from, you know, single source honey. It doesn't have to be monofloral. It can be a great polyfloral. Just make sure it's real honey.
Do you think that people are put off by price?
I think it's really difficult, and I think particularly when you're saying exactly as you are, that you know, when you've got kids and they're just ladling it on like it's, they're just using it as a sweetener.
Yeah,
I think that's the problem. Is honey should not be used as a sweetness component unless you've mindfully decided to. So I think it's about the sensitivities, you know, of people understanding the different price points. And a jar of honey that takes the bees so long to make and is so exquisite, and you can take your time and savour it and find different ways to enjoy it.
And actually, you might pay £3 for it, but you like you say,
£1.79.
Dylan's probably eaten that in 4 days.
300 grams.
But I've learned something today. I mean, and like you say, all my son is craving is sweetness. Yes. So if I just replace it with some golden syrup and see if he notices, then it's not damaging the bees then if he's having golden syrup. All he wants is a sweetener. He might as well just put some sugar, sprinkle some sugar on top. So I am going to stop buying that, because it is damaging to the bees, which you've explained today very clearly, which is wonderful. But also, if he does want some honey, then he has to be respectful to it. But are there good honeys in supermarkets?
I think if you can find one that doesn't say blend on it, then you're much more certain to be good for something. So this is the giveaway. way always is if it says blend on it, you know it's been aggressive.
Where does it say blend?
It says it'll say a blend of EU and non-EU or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the giveaway, and you just put it back down because you can't blend honey. I don't know if you've ever tried to put two honeys together, have you, Esther? You can't unless you heat it. You just cannot. So you know at the very least, even if it hasn't been adulterated with other sugars, it has been aggressively processed.
Right.
So you just don't want anything to do with that.
It's not got the medicinal purposes anymore.
And it destroys the nutritional and all the delicate things in there that break very easily in terms of honey. So I often call this a broken product, whereas real honey is a whole food, it's intact. And the other thing I do is if I think that something is okay, I will just, with my phone in wherever I am, just look up the producer. And what you want to encounter is a smiley face at the end of that. You don't want to encounter a corporation,
right,
or something that's so slick and is all sort of like full of animation, because real beekeepers can't afford that. Real beekeepers are, you know, they're busy looking after their bees, they're doing an honest job, you know, and I think that their websites tend to reflect that, you know, some are better than others. And China is exporting far more honey than it actually makes, and that's the same with quite a lot of other big honey exporters. And you know, all of this data about honey fraud and about honey production and stuff is all really widely available from government stats, from import and export stats. You just got to put the puzzle together. So this isn't just, you know, little bee farmers like us going, you know, we're not just having a whinge. This is real, but I'm afraid that government just lacks the will to tackle it.
Right.
And they've ducked it yet again with their move out of the EU. I thought maybe they will start to protect British beekeepers, but they haven't. They haven't at all. They just, you know, they haven't made anyone declare the countries of origin beyond saying, you know, a blend of this and that. So all the time that this is on the shelves, that's a concern to me, but just because people don't know what the choice is that they're being offered.
I know we've tasted all these wonderful honeys, but I just wanted to taste your honey.
Oh yeah, one of our and lovely. Okay.
And I was really amazed by the story of this honey from the Tree of Heaven.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about
it. So this is a honey that comes from one of our docklands at apiaries. So we've moved a lot of our central London hives because there's a huge overcrowding of hives in London out into far docklands, where we were really lucky enough to get an exclusive license. So what's happened is this is industrial land that has been cleaned and cleared many, many years ago and has naturally rewilded. Man hasn't done anything except leave it alone. They will build on it eventually, but in the meantime we've got these wonderful places for our bees. So you have this extraordinary rewilding, so you get the pioneer species like alder and fireweed and all the things the bees really love, all those old plants. And then you get the invasive species like Tree of Heaven, which you're not allowed to plant anymore, but was planted widely. And
why are you not allowed to plant it anymore?
Because it's so invasive.
Right.
It sends up suckers.
How big is it? How big does it grow
to? A great big, huge, mighty tree with great tons of pollen. And it has this sort of, I mean, honey tasting isn't always polite. You use words like cat's piss and sweaty and stuff. And to me, this is sort of sweaty, but in a Christmas cake way. Does that make sense?
Mm.
What I'm expressing?
Yes, and can you tell me why it's called the Heaven Tree?
Tree of Heaven.
Tree of Heaven.
It comes from China, and I think it's just a fanciful name that came from China, but now it's more largely called the Tree of Hell because of its impressive nature.
Because it's spread, yeah.
Because those suckers kill everything around it.
Right, so not recommended to have in your garden.
No, I know, so sad, because it does give this wonderful, wonderful flavour.
And when is it season?
I think it's sort of June, July, I think.
Oh, it's so yummy though.
It is yummy, isn't it? I mean, as London beekeepers, we're really glad of Tree of Heaven because it often fills in. If we don't get a lime flow, we might get Tree of Heaven flow. Lime flow is really important to us. But
it's very perfumey, isn't it?
It is very perfumey. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, what I mean about that slightly sweaty. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of tropical fruit.
Very tropical. And pineapple.
Yeah,
like a
passion
sort of fruit.
Passion
fruit.
All of that sort
definitely
of stuff.
Fruit cocktail.
You know, like you used to get tinned
fruit cocktail.
Tinned fruit cocktails.
God. It is. I used to love those.
Yeah.
Little squares.
Oh, me too, But it's also, can you see this thick
apart from the cherry.
So it's on your palate for such a long time.
Yeah.
It's just astonishing. Mm. And that, you know, we've tasted quite a few different textures today. I mean, that mouth feels every bit as important as part of the experience. And I mean, this is just yummy. And it won a massive prize. Well, two prizes, actually.
You're right, though, Esther. It is tinned fruit salad.
Yeah. And your book as well, Sarah, I've been reading, and it's so accessible, and it's such an easy read for planting for bees.
Yeah,
and I just think it's brilliant. Planting for Honeybees by Sarah Wyndham Lewis.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for the wonderful tasting. That was superb. And I'll call you up
whenever I'm feeling down. Queen Bees is written and created by Esther Coles and Jane Horrocks. It is produced by Claire Broughton, Andy Goddard and John Wakefield, and partly recorded at the Hives on my allotment near Crouch End in London. Our title music is Sweet Nothing by Amy May Ellis and Will Cookson. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Queen Bees Pod for pictures and videos from the Hive. Queen Bees is a Hattrick podcast.